Radio 3.9. Ace is stuck in traffic,
but he's coming today,
which is I don't know what to say about that, man.
I say stay off of M14
nowadays. It happened to me like 4 weeks ago, so I can't even like be like, hey, I'm your boss, you gotta do this thing. I'd be like, well, I guess that also happened to me.
It's just that one section, like the M14 US-23 north section, that spot right there, just it's terrible.
Automated cars will solve all of these problems. Probably. We'd like to thank our sponsors right off the bat. Underground Printing, the Bow Store, the Residence Inn, Ann Arbor Downtown, Homeshire Lending, Peak Wealth Management, the Alumni Association of the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Lantana Hummus, Human Element, Ecotelligent Homes, and Michigan Law Grad. Later in the show, we will have Reed McCarthy from Ann Arbor Elder Law, or as I like to call him, Ann Arbor Elder Law. I saw him at... never mind. We'll talk about it when he's on. Michigan defeats Minnesota by the score of 33-10. I had a very difficult time not continually saying 33-7 when I was talking about the score of this game.
Right.
Because, you know, they go on this, like, 12-play drive, and Michigan's got backup defensive tackles in and backup defensive ends in. And some of the stuff that happens on that drive is kind of ridiculous. So Michigan's in a pass rush exotic on... a standard down, and Minnesota runs the ball for like 25 yards. So not representative of the rest of the day.
Yeah, they cracked 100 yards there at the end. We were cheering for that in my section. At the end of the third quarter, they had a sack that dropped them below 100 yards total for the game. And then that was the game for the rest of the fourth quarter. Like, can we finish this thing under 100 yards?
Turns out the answer is no.
No.
And then the rest of the game was represented by Kalik Hudson not getting blocked. Yeah. Sometimes on purpose, and sometimes not on purpose, and always to the great detriment of the Minnesota Golden Gophers.
Yes, I actually admit I haven't been able to read the UFR, but I'm guessing that it says... The defense one got up to...
The defense one was the shortest UFR I have posted in years.
Yeah.
Because there was nothing to say except, maybe you guys should think about blocking Kalik Hudson.
Right, and that was kind of my thought, that like I can read this, but I kind of know that he's going to say they didn't block Kalik Hudson, and I can't learn that much out of, I don't know, maybe block Kalik Hudson.
Well, they kept running this Wildcat stuff that was similar to what Penn State did, and Michigan would see that. They'd run a corner blitz so that there wasn't any actual need for Kalik Hudson to contain the quarterback. And then Hudson would just go tackle the dude in the backfield. This happened like four times.
Well, plus Michigan is not nearly as afraid of Demry Croft as they are of some of the other running quarterbacks. Or, yeah, they just kind of ignored him on those zone reads where, I mean, you walk up, you come up, you stop. Oh, is he going to hand it to the quarterback or is he going to keep it himself? Obviously, he's going to keep it himself, so the quarterback is just wasted.
Yeah, and it looked like they hadn't even really drilled the mesh point very well. So by the end of that game, they weren't running a corner blitz, and Hudson just ran directly at the back anyway because they hadn't even gestured towards making that a legitimate threat. So you can't really tell a whole bunch of stuff from this game because it's just like, the RPS number for this game was 22-4, and I don't think I've seen a number like that in a long time. Al Borges might have put one up. Remember that Iowa game where, like, Denard's under center? He might have put that up, like, in the negative column. But I've never seen anything like that in a positive direction.
Are we lower on I know we don't play him again until 2020 now, but are we lower on P.J. Fleck now? Is this just, like, your first year? You can't really do anything with these guys?
Yeah. I mean, I don't understand how they could possibly go to Croft. Because, I mean, Connor Rota is averaging like 7.5 yards an attempt. Their offense isn't great with him in there.
Well, Demry Croft can run a little bit, and Rota really wasn't giving him anything.
I mean, can Croft run a little bit? He didn't run at all in this game. Like, he just kind of
There's run a little bit, and then there's, like, you know, actually a threat. And I think they were hoping he'd be a threat, and he's not.
I mean, he scrambled a little bit, but that's not worth, like, 2 yards an attempt from your quarterback.
So what's up, guys?
Hey, Ace. How's traffic?
Pretty bad. It took an hour to make a 15-minute drive.
Well, don't you use like the Google stuff?
I did, like, but it was choosing between traffic jams, and I made the wrong choice. The 14 traffic jam was particularly jammed.
We should buy you a moped.
I still would have had to take it down the shoulder. As long as you got bail money for me, I guess I can do that.
Is going between cars legal?
No.
I think it is.
I mean, like, you can do it in Europe because that's how they do it, but right, here that is frowned upon.
Well, just, you're good at enunciating. Couldn't you have, like, an accent? It's-a me, Ace and a Bender.
We've been over this. Maybe I can get Mark Gregor to call in for me or something.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
You just need, like, you'll just call Mark Gregor and be like, all right, you just talk to this cop. And
just FaceTime with him while
All right,
definitely. We're on topic.
Well, we're talking about the defense in the Minnesota game, which was
so. This is a short conversation.
We were done. Yeah.
Yeah.
on the other side of the ball, we see Michigan's run game hit peaks that they have not hit so far this year, mostly because they get three or four very long runs. And each of those saw cuts from the backs. And early in the year, I was complaining about zero cut running, where you just kind of run at your hole and then everybody knows where you're going. And in this game, particularly on the very first long touchdown, you saw the running back take a path farther outside and then cut upfield inside a hill. And I think that helped a lot on getting the safety out of the gap. And Higdon did that a few more times with smaller gaps.
Yeah, he had a few pretty impressive, like, 8 to 10-yard runs in there where right. he's kind of setting up the linebacker to go on the wrong – to make the wrong decision no matter what, really.
Right, and you figure – it doesn't look like the – it doesn't look like much is happening. It doesn't look like there's much of a crack. But because Higdon's running that power play exactly correctly, you do get something because that little wedge opens up. And often – what you'll see is, like, if you threaten one gap, a defensive lineman will fight to that gap.
Yeah.
And then you've made a cutback lane for yourself. And a lot of progress there. Obviously, a ton of progress on the offensive line, at least in run blocking. So you have Caesar Rees make his debut, and he moves people when he makes contact. He has the one absolutely terrible pass protection issue. But going back over the film, I think he was +7 and -0 on the ground. And he was getting a lot of kickout blocks, and usually kickout blocks are only like a half point because they're kind of a mutual agreement between defense and offense.
Yeah, like we're both out of this play.
Right. It's like, okay, yeah. the ball's not going to bounce out, but also you're not going to come back and make a tackle. and he was getting +1s because he would contact a guy and then move him 2 to 3 yards. And often that can be the difference between 2 yards and 5 yards just because you give your rear running back
a bit of a bounce out lane there.
Right, and he's just got more room to maneuver. And it didn't actually get Michigan any yards in this game because the kickout blocks weren't actually tested, but they could have been, and I think that they would have been productive if that happened. So, you know, with Steven Spinellis, he was like +4.5, again with no minuses, and he obliterated a defensive end on the short run.
Yeah.
The 5-yard touchdown, he pancaked a guy. He got some help from Cole, but, like, this is a guy who, you know, brings out the $6 words in press conferences.
Yeah.
So if he's moving people.
And they're making him available in press conferences, too.
I right.
mean, that says something.
And he's moving people, and he has that kind of level of intelligence. Well, then all of a sudden, like, you've got Runyon, you've got Spinellis, you have Ruiz, you have depth at all three spots on the interior offensive line.
And that was without mentioning Onwenu.
Well,
yeah, he's established.
Yeah, he's the starter. So, and all of these guys are first or second year players.
Yeah.
So the future of the three spots on the interior line is really, really good.
Yeah, it stung a little bit to lose Emil Ekio from this class, but if there was like a big time prospect at a position that they could afford to lose, it's probably on the interior of the offensive line right now.
Yeah, I'm not sweating that at all because they're set for 2 or 3 years at least.
Yeah. He was a bit of a luxury recruit, albeit the best one in the class.
Right. And the tackle, ask again later.
Yeah. Hopefully they can maybe get Ben Bradison to kick out given the depth behind him.
So one correction I had from my game column is I thought Bushel Beatty had more problems than he did. Mm-hmm. They only dropped back 16 times, but he got a minus one because he let his guy into Peters for the attempted post route. Other than that, he was solid. They weren't asking a ton from him in pass protection just because they didn't really drop back much and it was not a lot of long throws.
Yeah, and then on the first long Higdon touchdown run, he creates a large chunk of those yards by just moving a defensive lineman several yards past where he wanted to be.
Yeah, that was a very large gap, and we've seen Bushel Beatty be able to do that with some consistency. It really makes you wonder, like, what was going on during the spring when, like, people are talking about Runyon, and then in the fall, like, Elizio comes out of nowhere.
Do you think it's possible that that's tied into the emphasis on zone that has now pretty much entirely gone away? Because JBB does seem like a pretty ideal gap-blocking guy.
Yeah, that's a good point. Because both those other guys are much lighter and less, more mobile.
Yeah.
Less likely to blow someone off the ball, and now that you're going to mostly power, it's a different world for those offensive linemen.
And that seemed to benefit pretty much everybody, from the running backs to the linemen. Just at least with the configuration they've got right now, it seems to be working better for Higdon and Evans, that they've kind of got, you know, you can press a hole and then go to another one, but you pretty much have a good idea of where you're going on those plays.
Yes. And they're decisive, and we're not seeing, like, a lot of plays where an offensive lineman doesn't know what he should be doing based on, like, what the opposition is doing.
Yeah.
So nobody's running to the second level and not making a block and making it and getting a play disrupted, which they're doing on zone all the time. So they pretty much have their assignments down. The tight ends had another excellent day in blocking, and I think that's going to continue. And this is week five in which the run blocking has been somewhere between good and awesome. So this looks like a bona fide trend in a way that Kalik Hudson getting eight tackles for loss in a game might not be.
Not necessarily.
You know, he's
given the way Minnesota played that one.
Good player, but that's a record for a reason.
Yeah.
And then we saw Chris Evans get some blocking. He still didn't get the best blocking. He had to break a tackle to rip off his first touchdown,
But the blocking after that was really nice.
Yeah, and so I took a little bit of stick from the internet because I was real high on Chris Evans, and I'm just glad that, like, maybe that'll lessen now.
I still think that's going to pan out okay for you.
Yeah, I mean,
I've liked Evans a lot since high school.
And I think, like, you're talking about a guy who, once Michigan does have a functional passing game, he'll be much more of a factor just because he's a great fit when you can go to the spread formations that Michigan has all but abandoned.
Yeah, I mean, we did see him put that wheel route on somebody. That's something he's very capable of doing.
I'm waiting for that for 2 years.
And yeah.
And we finally see it.
Took a while.
Then it goes back in the box. So we'll probably see it again this year, and it should work about as well. The big negative was pass protection.
Yeah.
Because they got Brandon Peters damn near killed.
They sure did. I mean, you can expect some bumps in the road when you got a true freshman. And they mentioned that Cesar Ruiz has played every spot on the line except left tackle, which has got to be pretty overwhelming for a true freshman, even if he's probably mostly focused on the interior since fall camp. But that's a lot.
Yeah, I mean, the Ruiz thing doesn't really bother me because that's the guy in his first start. It's actually kind of a smart, dumb thing to do. If that makes any sense.
Because he was checking for a stunt.
Right. He's like, Okay, this guy's going on an outside, and it's probably Bush will beat his guy, so I'm going to come off this guy and go find someone else to do some work on. And I prefer that to what happened on the previous, like, Thunder sack, where Kugler, who's a fifth-year senior, doesn't understand that he's getting a stunt, and the guy goes straight up the middle.
Yeah.
Feels like that's happened an awful lot this year.
It does. It does seem like there's been an unfortunately even mix between just, like, breakdowns at right tackle that are just a one-man thing and then issues across the rest of the line where not everybody's on the same page.
Yeah, I mean, stunts are often difficult to pick up, but what are you going to do, like, if you just never get any better at it? I feel like the run game and the run blocking has taken a tremendous step forward, and we're still talking about the same kind of stunts that we were talking about after game two, when Elizio and Onwenu couldn't pick up Cincinnati stunts.
Yeah.
And it just feels like that's the same thing happening at the same rate.
Yeah, and it'd be one thing if it was still the right side of the line that was the primary issue there, but you've got Kugler screwing one up. You've got, I think, Mason Cole messed one up in this game.
I mean, it could have been Poggi who didn't go to the backside. Like, it was supposed to be a fake split zone. I don't know.
But that's also part of the problem. It's tough to even tell who's making these mistakes sometimes because they're consistent enough and happening in enough places that there's not any one area that you can point to and be like, this is the problem.
Right. So, I mean, I'm guessing, but I'm not guessing at the number of sacks Michigan gave up, which was three on 16 dropbacks.
That is a high number.
It's too high. So I was looking at this, and we'll talk about this more in Maryland, but Maryland's quarterback, Borton Schlager, is getting sacked on 12% of his dropbacks, which is terrible.
That is astronomical.
It is. They're like 120th or something in pass protection, and Michigan gave up sacks on almost 20% of their dropbacks in this game.
Not great. Small sample, at least, but not great.
And they weren't like sacks that the quarterback had some hand in.
Like when Steven Richardson is running unblocked at you, that you're just hoping not to die.
Right, and you know maybe you're able to dodge that guy, but it wasn't. None of them were covered sacks. It's not like he couldn't find anybody. Just all of a sudden, there was a totally unblocked guy running at his face or his back, and that's difficult to escape from.
Yeah, this was not like some of the sacks that John O'Korn took against Penn State, where he's standing in the pocket for 6 seconds waiting for something to happen.
Yes, thank you for reminding me about
that. You're welcome. Hey, man, you weren't there.
No, because I was like, nah. Because the last time I went
I didn't have that option.
That's true. I was like, you have to go to that game.
See?
I didn't think
it's not necessarily that I make terrible decisions,
it's
that these terrible decisions are imposed upon me.
You do make terrible decisions, though.
That's also true.
You went to the Alabama game.
Then I was young then.
I was like, don't do that.
That's several years ago now, man.
I know, but you still bring it up.
I know. As a terrible decision that I've made, I bring it up as like literally the worst decision I've made in my life.
I know, but like if you're going to bring it up, then I'm going to bring it up.
Enough. Remind me to do that for Gimmicky Top 5.
Oh, do you know what that is, by the way?
No.
Okay, good. What an excellent and excellent podcast we have going on here. All right, we're going to take a break, and Ace is going to type up really fast 5 answers for the Gimmicky Top 5.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go! Let's go!
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
We have a lot in common. You rode the bus to Bursley, so did Larry Page, and so did I. And we all love MGO Blog. I'm Nick Hopwood, your MGO financial coach. My entire family went to Michigan State, but I was the smart one finding my way to Ann Arbor to study econ. I've been a financial planner for 17 years, earning the designation Certified Financial Planner, and founded Peak Wealth Management in Plymouth. I know you're pretty smart, and you probably have a sweet retirement spreadsheet already. My job is to make sure. As a financial coach, I make sure you're on track, or if you're not on track, I tell you exactly what you're going to need to do. And if you listen, I'll be able to tell you how your future should look, just like the knowledge. And I have cool charts and graphs to tell the story, sort of like the Mathlete. To learn more or schedule time to chat, check out peakwm.com/mgoblog.
you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well-known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite, and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
Wow. Scale? What is that?
That was going in a very Linkin Park direction.
It did start to head that way.
Wow. So we have a new Lantana flavor here. Roasted garlic hummus, which I've actually already had. I'm surprised this is the first time we've talked about it on the show because it is delicious. It's made with white beans and topped with garlic, red peppers, and herbs. And then Seth crossed out the read, so I don't know what I was supposed to say now. They made a pumpkin spice one. Oh, no. You crossed that out. Delicious. Pumpkin spice. I think they made that as a joke. Check out all of their flavors at lantanafoods.com and find Lantana hummus at Bush's, Kroger, Meijer, or check your local grocer. And now, yeah, as is appropriate, we talk about the basketball.
Yeah.
What happened?
They had an exhibition.
Okay.
They're about to start their season against North Florida in a game that nobody will watch because it's 7:30 on BTN Plus, like right after the Maryland game's over. I'll probably be streaming it because I have to write the football game recap and can't be in two places at once.
North Florida.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see kind of how everything shakes out because we don't know who's going to start at point guard necessarily. And that's a pretty important position in John Beilein's system since every good Michigan team of late has had great point guard play.
Yeah.
Or at least all the excellent ones.
I mean, it'll be Simpson to start, and then we might see Simmons, like, emerge.
Yeah, I kind of assume that that's going to be the way it goes. I mean, Beilein certainly early in the season goes with the guys that he knows have the system kind of downloaded.
Yeah.
Which is why Duncan Robinson started last year at the four in the first game instead of DJ Wilson. And, you know, that changed. So Simpson, I mean, a lot depends on how much his shot has evolved, obviously, because it was pretty non-existent last year. Teams are just kind of daring him to shoot from the outside.
I mean, best case scenario, he's like,
you're hoping that he like scrapes into the 30, low 30s.
Acceptable. Right?
Yeah. But if he can at least can open jumpers, that at least changes a little bit of his outlook. He should at least be a very good defender, and he gets to the bucket. Whether he can finish is kind of a matter of how big the guys are once he gets there. He's not a large dude.
Yeah, this is the weirdest Beilein guard, I think, of the Beilein era, where it's like he goes after Xavier Simpson, a no-shoot, all-defense, like 5'9 dude.
Except he was an incredible scorer in high school. I mean, he's got kind of a strange profile. And, I mean, you could tell at the open practice of media day, he's definitely improved his shot form. He was getting it off a lot quicker. The release didn't look as funky. But then his one 3-point attempt in the exhibition as an air ball. So early returns were not tremendous, but that's a one-shot sample.
I kind of feel like they're going to try Simpson, and then it's just not going to be going that well. And then Simmons is going to come in, and that's going to be kind of like throwing a freshman quarterback out there where it's like, okay, he's clearly got some talent, but he's running around with like a chicken with his head cut off. Although he's so good at pick and roll stuff that, like, how different can Michigan's pick and roll be from everybody else's?
Yeah, no, I think he'll be able to get that down, and that'll be what ultimately gets him on the floor and probably in the starter's role, is that this Michigan team's going to need some shot creation. I mean, you lose Derek Walton, you lose DJ Wilson, you lose Zach Irvin.
Irvin didn't really create.
Irvin created more shots than Wilson by a pretty good deal. Well, I mean, he was a guy who you give the ball to. They had some specific sets to run for him. He took a decent number of the end-of-clock shots, and he was good at them. I mean, for all the complaints last year, that dude ended up being a relatively efficient scoring option.
Okay.
But, I mean, and you've got some obvious, like, Charles Matthews should be able to more than replace what Zach Irvin was bringing.
Yeah.
But Walton and Wilson both leave pretty huge shoes to fill, especially in Walton's case with the scoring production. And much of that was off the pick and roll, and that is what Jaron Simmons can do, and he was also an excellent creator in isolation situations. So given Michigan doesn't have a lot of guys that you'd want to just toss the ball to at the end of the clock and go, okay, go, I think Simmons is going to have a pretty clear role there.
Yeah, and he's ball dominant, but this is a team where that's fine. Like,
yeah.
Is there really anyone else on the team that's going to, like, compete for him with him for, like, a lot of I'm dribbling the ball and trying to make a shot? Like,
Charles Matthews.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, he was a very effective getting to the bucket in the exhibition game. He's got the athleticism to do it. With him, I mean, the big thing that Beilein brought up at Media Day was just kind of understanding when to pick his spots, because Beilein actually wants him to take more threes. Which was interesting to hear, given Matthews shooting at Kentucky. But Beilein's kind of hammering home to him, like, pick your spots on when to just keep the ball moving, when to drive, and when to pull up and shoot. But he trusts Matthews' jumper at this point, or at least that's what he's saying publicly. But Matthews dropped 21 or 23 points in the exhibition game. He was easily Michigan's leading scorer and the guy who was most impressive with the ball in his hands. I think he's going to end up being the team's leading scorer.
Okay. And then any sense that Muhammad Ali Abdur-Rahman will be able to take more usage on this year, or is he still going to be stuck in the 18 range?
I mean, he's more down in like the 16 or 17 range the last 2 years. And that's, I mean, I think at that point, especially when like the two newcomers are going to be relatively ball dominant players, and they might also be running more offense through Mo Wagner. First of all, I don't know if they're going to need Rahman to take on a higher usage. And also, I think his game fits best when he kind of is in the – when he's in the role he has now, where you give him some drives off and off of motion, where you get him a step going towards the basket, and he's a good finisher there. I don't know if you want to put him in a lot of pick-and-roll situations, because he hasn't shown that he's much of a passer out of those. He's kind of a just-put-your-head-down-and-go guy. But he's turned into a very good spot-up shooter. He was at almost 50% in Big Ten play last year from beyond the arc, and I think he's the guy you kind of want to keep in that role player situation, especially since Michigan needs him to pick up his defense a lot. He graded out as Michigan's worst defender last year by a considerable margin, and that was with Duncan Robinson on the team. So that's not good. And with him, he also broke the lane agility record for Michigan in a Camp Sanderson drill. Those two things should not go together.
No,
they shouldn't. If you have that sort of foot quickness and agility, you should be an above average defender at the very least. So with Rock, I think it's a matter of just getting focused on defense for the most part.
Seems a little late for that to.
It does a little bit, but you know, seniors do sometimes turn into at least decent defenders when they were not good defenders early in their career. But I think, you know, if I was trying to figure out what to emphasize for Rahman this offseason, I would hope it was just keep doing what you're doing on offense and let's really drill down defense.
And then Mo Wagner didn't have like a up Mo Wagner game. I was curious to see, did they post him at all? Because that's like a way to generate shots with a skill.
A little player. Bit. He got a nice post feed from Isaiah Livers, which actually is something that Livers does quite well. He's a good passer. But still, I mean, Wagner's still going to be the perimeter-oriented big for the most part, but he has gotten bigger. It was encouraging to see Michigan's rebounding in general was not very good in this game, but he pulled down 10 boards himself, which was something he was not doing often at all last year. So he knows. I mean, you know, he got pretty harsh feedback when he tested the NBA draft waters about his rebounding and his defense, and that dude really wants to make the league. So he knows what he has to do. His defense is probably never going to be
good.
Yeah, because he's not the swiftest guy, and he's doesn't have a huge wingspan. He doesn't have that kind of shot blocker instinct either. But hopefully he'll at least have the positioning down a little bit better for rebounding. And he did show with his post defense last year, he can at least be obnoxious with it. He can knock the ball
away.
Yes,
he's a pest.
Yeah. Now he has to balance that with staying out of foul trouble.
Well, hopefully he'll get a little bit more respect this year because, you know, there were a number of calls last year where it's just like, how do you even do that?
Yeah. Now, with big men, they tend to take a few of those. Cause,
well, at least this year there is an ogre behind him.
They're now calling John Teske Big Nasty.
Okay.
That is his nickname last year was Big Sleep, so that kind of tells you where they
sound a little facetious, if
yeah,
I'm being honest.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's an aspirational nickname.
Okay.
That's how they want him to play. That's how they're you know, he's doing it in flashes a little bit more now, and they're trying to get him. You could still, like, I heard during the open session of practice, when he was in a drill, Duncan Robinson's really become kind of a vocal leader out there. He was basically an extra coach. And he called him Sleep just casually when he screwed up a drill. It's like, come on, Sleep. And it was like, okay. So we see why John Teske has maybe not played more. And, I mean, we could see last year when he was on the court.
Sure,
He was lost out there.
He looked like a deer that had just been born.
A really large deer. The biggest deer ever.
Like a bison that had just been born.
But he has maintained a lead on Austin Davis for that backup center spot. He's a legit 7-1. He should be able to provide some shot blocking, and hopefully rebounding too. I mean, that'll be as much a matter of positioning as it is about his size. So we'll see if that...
The size helps.
The size certainly helps. But his offensive skill set is actually pretty interesting. He's got a decent jumper.
No, I don't even want to hear about that.
And he's a good passer.
Oh, that's fine.
Yeah. The passing is definitely what is going to be more relevant this year. I'm not expecting the 7-1 guy to be canning 40% of his threes or whatever. But he will be able to at least provide some floor spacing, even if just standing at 18 feet and opening up the lane. Hopefully he'll be setting some rather crushing screens. And he provides a large target to hit off of those pick and rolls.
Can he catch the ball?
Jury's still out.
Okay.
So, I mean, we'll see. We haven't seen him enough in those pick and roll situations to really get an idea.
Because that's always a thing. There's always, like, big guys who just have jelly hands.
Yeah.
J.C. Mathis.
I remember J.C.
Remember J.C. Mathis?
Yes. Yeah, he was...
Who looked... for all appearances, to have two functional hands.
He was not the impact transfer we were hoping
for. He didn't, like, I don't know if he had, like, an ulnar nerve thing going on 100% of the time.
Come on, man.
His whole life.
Come on, man.
Hey, you did it earlier.
I know. I'm just, you know, noting the hypocrisy.
Does it make you feel better?
Yeah, it does.
Okay, does it?
I got to take it where I can get it, man.
Sure, yeah.
But the other position, I think the most interesting one that we haven't talked about yet, is the four spot.
I don't want to talk about it.
I mean, there's
yeah,
good,
I don't
there's good to talk about here.
What? I mean, like, okay, Duncan Robinson has his, like, aspects.
Like, he's going to be, like, his offensive game is going to make up for a lot on defense.
It is going to have to,
but he is, like, maybe the best shooter in the country.
You had, like, a transition stat you'd looked up.
Yeah, he was. I accidentally pulled his sophomore year numbers first, but he averaged over 1.6 points per possession in transition as a sophomore,
good
while
God.
Shooting like nearly 85% effective field goal percentage. And his numbers were similar last year. He was in the top 25, top 10 among high major players in transition efficiency. And that's where I expect he'll get a lot of his buckets. Michigan is going to look to run out a decent amount this year. I mean, they'll still be a slow team in half court, but especially since they're still going to be relying a lot on secondary rebounding, from guys like Charles Matthews. Those are guys who can turn around and get the break initiated in a hurry.
Yeah.
And as we saw the last couple of years, Michigan really knows that their number one option in transition is to find Duncan Robinson open at the three-point line, like maybe even over a dunk.
No.
Like, you take the dunk when it's there.
How many points per possession is a dunk?
It's two.
Yes.
It's two.
Except for, like, who is the almost spectacular dunking guy last year?
I mean, I think you're thinking of 2 years ago when Aubrey Dawkins kept on coming incredibly close to some just, like, tear-down-the-house dunks. And we just back-run the heck out of them.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like, 1.95 points per possession. And then, but, I mean, Robinson's shockingly close to that for shots that you miss a fair amount.
It's true.
And Michigan was also good at kind of finding him in that, like, that secondary break, that unsettled period when the defense is still trying to get their matchups.
Yeah.
They were very good at hitting him on those. And he's never going to be a guy who takes people off the dribble a bunch, but he has developed a decent, like, pump fake, get to the basket, finish as kind of a surprise thing.
Yeah, he can do, like, twice.
Yeah. You know, that'll be a once or twice a game occurrence, but that's something that's still going to help him get a scoring average probably into the double digits. But I'm also pretty intrigued by Isaiah Livers, the freshman.
Okay.
And I think there's a chance that he could really not necessarily carve into Robinson's minutes a ton, because Robinson should get minutes in most situations because of his offense. But if they can save Charles Matthews from having to guard opposing power forwards all the time, that'd be pretty nice. And Livers is actually a power forward at 6'7", 230. He knows that the key to getting on the floor this year is rebounding and defense. And he was a pretty solid defender at the college level. And he's also got, I mean, he's not going to be Robinson from the three-point arc, but he's got a decent outside shot and good court vision. So there's a skill set there where you're hopeful if he, now that's always the thing with Michigan freshmen, is if he gets down the system, he can be a big-time contributor right away. And he's going to have to be a contributor no matter what, really, because Michigan does not have other options at the four. So Livers is going to be thrown into the fire. There might be a little bit of an adjustment period, but I think he'll be a pretty decent player by the end of the year.
North Florida is the Lumberjacks, the Muskrats.
You're going to make me look this up now, aren't you? Or do you want to just keep guessing?
The Golden Champagne Flutes. That's probably not a thing, though.
No,
you're actually looking it up.
I'm trying to. My computer is locking me out.
Oh, I did that. I changed your password.
Oh, thanks.
You have to type in my butt.
Didn't work.
Didn't work?
Didn't work. My butt did not work.
Well, why don't you try typing
in... Oh, the caps lock is on. That's a...
Rookie mistake.
That's a problem.
Rookie mistake. North Florida, drum roll, the Wallabies, the Swamp Gas Monsters.
The Ospreys.
Ospreys. I knew it was something cool.
Yeah, that's a pretty good one.
Yeah. Those are eagles, people. They eat fish.
This is a very informative podcast.
Do we have anything else about basketball we would like to talk about?
I mean, it'll be interesting to see kind of how the bench rotation shakes out a little bit.
Yeah.
I was surprised that Ibby Watson got all the minutes pretty much as the backup shooting guard, with also the Michigan played a decent number of two-point guard lineups out there, including Eli Brooks seems to be ahead of Jordan Poole right now, which I thought was surprising.
Okay.
And Brooks was operating at both the one and the two, but Poole was kind of the guy, you know, he was the highest rated player in the class. He's also the youngest, which may explain why he's not ready yet, and he did have kind of just a shooter role even in high school. But that is the thing that you kind of expected to translate over into Beeline's offense and give that kid an immediate role. And at least if the exhibition is any indication, it looks more like he's headed for a redshirt because he didn't get on the court until walk-on time, and every other scholarship player played significant minutes.
Okay.
So we'll see, because that was kind of the, you know, that's your chance to play him without burning a redshirt.
Did Watson look more plausible this year? I mean,
he made a three-pointer. Okay. He made one of his three, so we can start with
that. So he took three and he made one.
We can start with that.
Okay. That's improvement.
His athleticism is a significant plus. He still looks lost on defense.
All right.
So it wouldn't be surprising to see potentially a decent number of two-point guard lineups out there if they're not super comfortable playing Watson or Poole, especially since Simpson is such a plus defender and is quick enough and physical enough that you can put him on bigger players and get away with it. We'll see. I mean, there might not be a role for Watson or Poole right now.
All right, and the team feels like what kind of team?
It feels like a six seed.
A six seed?
You know, I mean, I think they'll round into form towards the end of the season to be a solid tournament team. It might be a little rocky early on, given all the newcomers and the just sheer amount of turnover. You know, they have to replace a lot of production. And they also, we got to figure out where the rebounding is going to come from and where the defense is going to come from, too.
Yeah, it's bad when you're like, oh, man, we lost our point guard. How are we going to rebound?
Yep. It's the one stat Derek Walton has put up in the NBA so far. He grabbed a rebound at his only minute on the court for Miami. So he's averaging, stretch that out. That's 48 rebounds a game.
It's a double-double.
That's record
0 points
pace.
And one rebound. Yeah. Extrapolates to double-double.
I mean, he'll be a specialist, but quite a specialist.
My wife isn't here. She went away for a day to do a keynote speech. So I'm very tired today, if you can't notice.
Yeah.
If you can't tell.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Just based on that sentence, yes.
Yes. I'm sleepy. Let's take a break. Come back, and we will have a gimmicky top five that Ace hates.
Take a break or nap.
He hates all of them that are so super cool.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages $90,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go!
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite, and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
Hi, this is Seth from MGoBlog. So we bought our home through a local bank. Family friend was the banker, but the underwriter was it was a nightmare. So we went to refinance. I talked to Matt. It was so different. He shops the loan to different underwriters, so we were a priority for them. And he knows what they needed from us ahead of time, so we didn't have to keep digging through our old paperwork. He's incredibly ethical. He knows the system. He knows where they take advantage. And he keeps a small shop, and he does all the work himself, so he keeps all the costs down. Anyway, that's why I highly recommend Matt. He's licensed in Michigan, Ohio, and Florida. You can give him a call at 734-531-9950. Visit his new office in Ann Arbor on State Street, or go to homesurelending.com/mgoblog, and he'll take care of you. That's Homesure Lending, NMLS number 1161358.
In a word, I'm going, 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 going. In a word, I'm going, 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 going down.
You're outside living your life, a world-class lover in a world-class life. Still outside living your life, a world-class lover, world-class life.
Yeah.
That was significantly funkier.
That's that did not have a Linkin Park vibe.
No.
Which I am grateful for. All right. So our Gimmicky Top 5 is based because I trash talk Catan.
You sure did.
In the game column. And Morris, who's the guy who runs our board, came in. He's like, if you do that again, I quit. So strong feelings about board games is this week's Gimmicky Top 5.
We might lose our sound guy.
No. Catan didn't make my list. I have stronger feelings about other board games. Catan.
Man, this is going to be a series of very strong feelings then.
Oh, yeah. It gets tense, man.
My feelings are not going to be nearly as strong.
This is going to be like the cheese one. Where you're just, you know,
I may have cheated on number one again. Oh, but, you know.
You can't write American cheese.
No, that's not what I put. We'll get there.
Right, we welcome in Reed. God damn it.
Brian.
Reed McCarthy from Ann Arbor Elder Law. Reed is very understanding.
I am. Hi, Brian. Hey, Ace.
Because I was at Ricewood, and I was like pointing, and I'm like, hey, Ann Arbor Elder Law. Like, I totally blanked on his name. And then earlier.
Sponsor MGoBlog.
He came to
It's great.
Our season opening event that Matt Demarest presents. I remember his name, mm-hmm. not yours. And he's like there, and I'm like, oh, I recognize that guy. Like, hey, how you doing? Thanks for coming out. And he's like, hey, I'm one of your sponsors. Like, right. You
yes.
do that. Thank you for doing that.
It's funny you mentioned Ricewood because they called me Brady there for about 6 weeks.
Brady.
Yeah. Because they just knew I had a generic white guy name, but they couldn't remember what it was. So they just assigned me to Brady.
That's like a.
So this is something that happens.
This is the wrong town to be called Brady. I guess it depends
right
on which
yeah,
Brady.
I mean, yeah.
All right.
It'll
first
work.
To last name.
Have you been able to replace Ricewood as a go-to restaurant for?
Well, I mean, I hardly.
They're closed right now.
They're closed for the season. I hardly go there because it's like a lunch thing, and I live at home. I live at home. I work at home. So like instead of going out
lunch
to lunch
is very convenient.
Usually I just open the refrigerator.
Right. What was last night's dinner? All right.
Yeah, so that's how we do it. But anyway, we have very strong feelings about board games, or at least I do.
I like the fact that last week the lawyer, the very smart lawyer you had on, had great, hot, smart takes on
yeah.
how to change the NCAA, and I get board games, which is actually way more my speed.
Yeah!
There we go. All right.
I was worried that I'd have to be intelligent. I do not. Right. I can just revert to
I'm here, well. So you never yeah, have to worry about
that's
that.
Okay.
different lawyers for different things.
I'm the board game lawyer.
Ace to number five.
All right. Cards Against Humanity is a great kind of bar table icebreaker. I ended up at one of those like breweries in Detroit where they have like the communal table situation
okay, yeah.
with a bunch of board games. And ended up it ended up turning into like a weird double date situation because we were just sitting across from another couple. The Cards Against Humanity set was right there. I was like, all right, let's just do it. And
I liked
befriended
it.
A couple strangers. It was nice.
I liked that game when I was 12 and it was called Mad Libs.
Oh.
I do remember Mad Libs. I'm not that young.
It's up there with New England IPAs and things I'm done talking about and done dealing with.
Ooh.
I know.
Oh, now I'm going to have to start getting beer takes.
Well, we've done a beer one, haven't we? Yeah.
We have.
Yeah, probably.
We can do it.
You just
one.
Hated on sours, like real sad. We did like places we enjoyed in Ann Arbor, and you got on me for Jolly Pumpkin because of my love of sour beers.
Yeah, sour beers suck. But anyway, read your number five.
Risk.
What about Risk?
Oh, well, man. The fact that there was a time in my life when I could devote the massive amount of actual time
right,
to a
yeah.
game. Like in college, you could play Risk. It would sit there in your dorm room, your suite, or your fraternity house. Would sit on a table for
not
weeks on it.
Not the fraternity house.
Yeah. Well, wherever
it's
it would
not
be
making
for
it
you.
In the fraternity house.
Yeah. There's some fraternities that it
okay,
made.
Like there's a North Campus fraternity.
but the fact that I at one time in my life I had enough energy and time to devote to something that wasn't earning money or something that I was legally responsible for is kind of remarkable.
It is amazing that Risk games, you're like, okay, this is going to be over in like 3 hours.
No.
And then 3 hours, nobody's been eliminated. You just keep like you've run out of pieces. They're all on the board. And then
you're all in like four corners of the board because nobody's trying to attack themselves. Yeah, attack yet. Now, I played a game with like a few friends at high school where we literally played through the night, and then a friend picked up a PlayStation, and we were not done because it's Risk.
Right, yeah.
And then a friend picked up a PlayStation controller back when they were still wired and accidentally dragged it all the way across the board. And we're just sitting there like, no!
Well, that was a blessing.
That was.
I mean, yeah, it was. It saved us from another night exactly
so,
like that.
So is this a pro-Risk or an anti-Risk take?
It's a pro-Risk at that time and place. There's okay. no way yeah. that could ever happen.
I am anti-Risk because it's just a slog.
I mean,
like there's no end.
It's incredible if you win because, like, you have outlasted every, like, you have made it through the apocalypse.
Yeah,
like,
you are the chosen one.
But if you, like, get to the end and you don't win, like, that's, like, you're
what
on homicide watch.
All right, my number five is Jenga Rules. Because Jenga does rule.
It's a great game.
And, like, we have a block party every year, a street over, and they have, like, an enormous like 2x4 Jenga set, and that's because like if you bust that Jenga set, you have to put it together, and that's like a half hour project. And
I love the oversized ones; those really add like a level of like, man, this is high stakes.
But like we got like a stupid bar Jenga set, which is just like a little one at some point, and we carried it with us everywhere, and we'd like play it, and it's just like the tension when you're pulling the little thing out, and then like you're planning, like, okay, is this going to be like a two or a one, and but like, can I actually get this out? And it's just a set of stupid blocks. There are no rules, but Jenga is awesome.
It's great. There is one rule that you need to remember, though, because some people play it where you don't put the block on top after you take
what?
It out, and that's BS.
That is BS.
I've gone against people like that. It's like, no, you're doing it all wrong. Yeah, you don't just like knock it down into this little skeleton. Like the whole point is that you have to make it more precarious.
Right. And then like at some point you can actually like pull from the new level.
Yeah. You can start finding out where the little weak ones are. Do little tap tests.
Yeah.
Jenga's great.
Jenga's great. Ace, your number four.
I won't play any game that requires me to draw.
Okay, that's like an ethical policy.
Yeah, I know. But it kind of takes out like...
No, that's a fine.
Yeah,
that's a strong
so
opinion.
So like, yeah, that's my opinion.
I'm
a terrible artist.
Right.
I don't like games that like put you under a significant amount of pressure. Like, I mean, I guess Jenga's like that too.
Right, yeah.
But I guess when you're bad at something and everybody's watching you do it, I don't particularly enjoy that.
Okay.
And I am not good at drawing.
Yeah.
So I'm out on those.
Reed, you're number four.
Chess. My kids love...
You just keep saying words. Go ahead.
The opinion's coming.
Yeah, okay.
Well, my sons, a 6 and 7-year-old, Leroy Horde McCarthy and Jared Bunch McCarthy.
Excellent.
Much enjoy playing chess with each other, although they cheat rampantly. It's just fun to see. But what's great about
How
it as an adult... Well,
just move pieces.
You just move pieces.
Yeah.
You can feel very smart beating a 7-year-old at chess. It's strangely fulfilling.
I got dragged into back when Heiko was still here.
Okay.
I went to a...
he is a dragger.
Yeah, I went to a party at his house that was like a med school gathering. I mean, these are like a bunch of people from his program, which was like the MD, PhD program. So every single person at this party is smarter than me.
Well,
and they have a chess set out in the middle of the table. And Heiko was like, let's play. And I got whooped.
You got whooped.
I mean, just don't...
By Heiko.
Don't play chess against MD, PhDs.
I mean, I want to give it a shot.
I mean, yeah, you're an engineer.
Yeah.
History majors don't do that.
I was a classics major, so that's like, yeah.
All right, my number four is Cards Against Humanity is overrated.
Okay.
Because it's only fun the first time you play through the cards, and then it's done. It's over. It's like watching a comedy special you've already seen. And you just know what the most inappropriate card is for every situation, and you're like, all right, well, that one's going to win.
Sorry, I guess that's why they keep putting out those like expansion packs.
Right,
but then you
yeah.
have to keep spending money to keep the game good.
Right, yeah. It's like it's funny, and then it's like, oh, I've already seen this card. So like the first time through, it's like amazing.
Yeah.
And then you're like, I've already played Cards Against Humanity once. It has no replay value.
Fair.
Ace, your number three.
Magic the Gathering is deeply confusing and probably a scam. like other members of my house have like rekindled the Magic the Gathering fad, which was a thing when I was in like first grade.
Yeah.
And it just seems like a way to spend a lot of money on a very confusing game that doesn't look that fun.
What's the difference between that and Pokemon? I don't really... they kind of have
Pokemon
same.
Seems far more enjoyable.
Pokemon's more of a video game. And
there were cards, right, back in the
Yes, there were. There was a card game, there's too. But like it's it was like much simpler. Like, the card game was pretty straightforward.
Well, they both are for kids.
Magic's for kids, but Magic's for kids who are like...
goth.
Yeah. Geeks, like, I mean, you need a certain level of, like, I really care about this, and I'm going to make this happen.
I
have observed several games by now. I still have no idea how it works.
Well, you have to tap your lands for mana, and then you play the cards, and then you have creatures on the board.
I knew you'd have an idea.
I may have done this. I'm not surprising anybody who's ever listened
Zero
to me talk.
Zero people are surprised.
That I had, like, a Magic phase, and it wasn't, like, a go-to-the-store or anything kind of phase, but they have... Magic the Gathering online, so you get, like, my favorite thing to do is, like, you'd open up some packs and you draft.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'd play these decks against other people. And
see, that seems to be the big appeal for my roommates. It's just, like, they get, like, boxes of cards and open them all up, and it's like how I
they
was
get boxes of cards, like actual physical cards.
Yeah, actual physical cards.
Yeah,
it's in 2017, still doing this. I was shocked.
It seems like a way to really monetize D&D.
Like, they bought D&D. Yeah. At some point, Wizards of the Coast, which... Oh, God.
I am now so glad we did this segment.
But, like, at some point, I have a D&D phase. I went to Gen Con a few times. This is not surprising. Why am I confessing things that everybody already knows?
There's nothing wrong with this.
So, at some point, like, the company that publishes Dungeons & Dragons got bought by Wizards of the Coast, and I was like, how is that even possible? And then I got into Magic, and it was just like, I have to buy a pack, and I have to open a pack, and this is online, and it's just, you're like, you're clicking the button to buy more stuff, and you're like, this is an addiction, I need to stop doing this, and then you keep doing it, and, that was about 10, 12 years ago, Yeah,
Brian's so frazzled by this admittance that he just spilled some water.
I didn't think this was the direction it was going to go. You brought up Magic, and I was like, "Oh God, Magic Anonymous, here I come." Except I didn't need that because I quit.
And you're no longer anonymous.
Well, I mean, that's
it's a natural progression though to Blogger from
Magic. Yeah, Johnny Depp's probably been to Narcotics Anonymous. That's not fair. Not Johnny Depp, the other guy. Iron Man.
Sheen?
Yes.
That's not Iron Man.
I know.
Robert Downey Jr.?
Yes. No. He said that he's... whatever. Reed, you're number three.
Games with too many pieces, like Mousetrap and Axis and Allies.
Hmm. Oh, Axis and Allies is a good one.
It's a great game, but man...
Mousetrap, the pieces are like the whole point, right?
Right, but
you lose play it as a kid, and then you lose a piece, and then you can never play it again.
And then, like, you don't have a game anymore. I just don't like all the pieces that go with the games like that, but especially with Axis.
That's
Allies,
a kid's game, and kids aren't necessarily great at keeping track of a bunch of tiny things.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I had that game growing up. Mouse we played it like two or three times, and we couldn't play it anymore.
I thought it was the coolest thing in the world, but whenever I was like, ooh, let's play Mousetrap, they're like, no, we can't play it because we lost a piece.
That's basically it.
So I was like, I never got to have the Mousetrap experience at all because of the stuff that you're talking about. No. My number three is that Cranium is the worst game in the history of the world except for number one. Cranium is like a combo, like Pictionary.
Mm-hmm. They make you draw, so I'm against it.
But it's not just that. Like, I can handle the drawing part, but there's like a hum this song thing, which is the worst thing in the world because you're playing with your grandmother, and even if she knew what the song was, you can't hum. So you're trying to like
and
hum.
There's like a 0.2% chance that she's going to know the song.
Right,
probably.
Yeah. You're trying to like hum My Humps at your grandma. and I'm like...
And for a multitude of reasons, that's not optimal.
This is a true story. There's like a sculpting aspect.
Yes, with like clay and whatever.
There's like a sculpting aspect of the game and...
There's like silly putty involved.
My grandma draws a card and she starts sculpting. And nobody wants to guess what it is because it's clearly a boob. And that's literally what it was. The card said nipple. So she was, my grandmother sculpted a boob because of these people. And they make you hum. It's terrible.
All around awful.
I have a strong feeling about this game. Ace, you're number two.
Stealing from the bank in Monopoly is legit as long as nobody notices.
No.
That's how we played growing up.
If you're the bank.
Well, the point is you kind of put it in an area where maybe multiple people can reach it. And then, I think Monopoly, like, it takes so long, and you kind of, you can see how it's going to play out.
Yes.
That if you don't allow some measure of cheating.
You're spoiling my upcoming.
Oh, my bad. Yeah. But my point is Monopoly's not fun unless you cheat.
Okay.
Agreed.
Read your number two.
I expected that to be much more controversial.
So my number two is going to be that Battleship is the best game of all, bar none. I love Battleship. Playing with my kids again right now, it's fun. At one time, this works per person you play. You put all your ships in one little tight group, and it messes them up. Especially, again, like a seven-year-old. It blows their mind. They're like, "How? I've gotten seven hits in a row. I don't know why I haven't sunk anything."
That is cruel. And I'm definitely doing that the next time I play Battleship.
It works. My wife got very angry when I did it to her. And then at the end of the game, of course it only works once. At the end of the game, you turn around and then all the ships are, and there's just like white pegs everywhere. And then there's this little cluster of ships and they may have sunk in one, but they've gotten like 20 hits. And then they just don't want to play anymore. That's it. It's over.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, I'm keeping that one in the memory bank.
My number two is that Twilight Struggle is the most unsatisfying board game I've played. Twilight Struggle is a two-player simulation of the Cold War, and it is the coolest thing ever. And my wife got through like one round, and she's like, "I'm never playing this again, and I'm getting a divorce." Because it's like, "Oh, you don't want to reenact like the time they shot down the U2?" And she's like, "No, I do not. I have no interest in any of this. Please go away." So I play with my friend Nick. And he's the commies, and I'm the United States. And he crushes me in, like, three turns. Like, there's 10 turns in this game. And, like, if your score gets up to, like, plus 20 or minus 20, you automatically win the game. And there's, like, a, you know, you get points, you lose points. And he just annihilates me. And then he's like, "Well, gotta go." And I'm like, "Oh, but I just want to play this game that is so cool." And nobody will play it with me because then Nick moved to San Francisco because he hates me.
Oh, this is a really sad story.
It is. So, Twilight Struggle. Highest rated two-player game on Board Game Geek, and I can't play it.
Tragic.
I know.
Yeah.
You don't seem sincere about that at all.
I'm trying.
You're not!
I'm not trying. That was a lie.
Ace, you're number one.
See, I had trouble coming up with this, so I just put down, I played Super Smash Bros. 64 yesterday, and that was better than any board game.
Yeah. Except...
And it was with three other people. We legitimately had four people all playing. I got it. I posted on Twitter. I got an N64 that's like brand new. It's incredible.
So my Smash Brothers story is I go down to like Kentucky frequently for Christmas. And there are three brothers down there. And they all have Smash Brothers. And I play as the fourth person. And I generally get my butt kicked. Because I don't have a Nintendo and they're good at this game. But... when I start doing well and I'm like, you know, killed a couple people, I still have all my lives and things are going okay, they would gang up on me.
Oh, that's not cool.
Because they're brothers and like, "Who is this stupid interloper?" I'm like, "I'm not even good at this game.
Like, let me have my moment."
Right. So
that was me as a kid was going over because my parents never let me have a console.
Yeah.
So I'd go play at friends' houses, but they all had, you know, significant number of hours in on these games over me. So like, GoldenEye, which I love. Oh. Smash Brothers, which I love. I know Brian has a thing about GoldenEye, which is insane. It's insane.
I know. Like my thing about GoldenEye is that I suck at it so badly I will never play.
Yeah.
Like I did start to get because I got GoldenEye with the 64 that I picked up recently, and I forgot how freaking sensitive the scope is. Yeah, it's really difficult to get that little... joystick to get terrible. You looking in the direction that you want to be.
And like it's like a split screen thing, so you're looking at like a 14-inch television or something, and you're like looking at like a tiny.
But the game's so good.
It's just a shooter.
It's so good. Spawn and die. It's your roommate who plays 24/7.
Whatever.
Yeah. Halo 3 remains
this
my
is,
favorite.
This is a whole different.
Special.
This is
I know.
A video game gimmicky yeah. top yeah. five because you.
Yeah, I'm gonna ruin. I'm gonna ruin multiple of them. But,
you copped out.
Yeah, I did.
You copped out. Reed, you're number one.
Trivia Pursuit. Great game. I like trivia-based games. I tend to be good at them. But the original Trivia Pursuit is now nigh impossible because it's all based in the 1980s.
So you're
guessing. Yeah, you're guessing like sports and leisure
right,
questions
yeah.
from highlight. You have to know intimate highlight knowledge. So the game has become progressively more difficult over time if you go back to the old dog-eared original Trivial Pursuit. But that was kind of a measuring stick for your trivia knowledge when I was a kid. There was a time when you go into a bar and there's always Trivial Pursuit cards in every bar, and really love that game.
Yeah, I
as a trivia bowl guy, you must have been.
Well, no, I got frustrated because I thought all those questions were like who cares what this 1960 celebrity did to his dog? Like I it was like where are the questions about geography and geology and all the other G sciences? And they're like, sports and leisure, that's trivial. So.
Heyo.
God damn it, Ace. My number one is that Monopoly sucks. Amen. For the same reasons that, because you're trying to like trade with people, and it's usually like a seven-year-old, and they don't want to trade because it's mine. Or it's like your mom, and your mom just like, no, just take it. And it's really, it's just.
It can go on a long time, too.
Right. And if, like, you don't actually get the hotels built up and all that stuff, it's just, like, you just keep going around and you get your $200 and you get your $200.
What is the equation for how many Monopoly games you started versus how many Monopoly games you finished?
God. Oh, my God.
I feel like it's like, just like, the number of Monopoly games like, I played like, minus, like, two.
Yeah, yeah. Like, if you really got honest with yourself, you may have actually completed three Monopoly games.
Yeah, and then there's at some point, everybody's just sick of playing. And
they're just like, we're just...
Yeah,
like,
you win, yeah. whatever.
There's.
I don't know if I've ever, like, officially completed
Yeah, someone just gets
game.
Declared a winner.
I have to go home... I'm having dinner. Goodbye.
Yeah, and the game's like, all right, well, I got to roll these dice and hope I don't like land on this hotel. Like, that's fulfilling. Like, oh, I rolled the wrong dice. My strategy is completely wrong with the rolling of the dice. It's terrible.
It's just like a game where you have to pay rent. Like, that's... to hell with that. I do that enough.
Well, sometimes people pay rent to you.
That's true. You know, that there is that nice yeah. part of it. But it seems like more often, you know,
also
land on somebody else's space.
If I can continue on my, like, YIMBY kick, why does building more housing make it more expensive?
It does not make a lot of sense from a, like,
and then you replace the houses with a hotel. That doesn't make any sense.
Must be a really ritzy hotel, man.
I know, but you don't build single-family housing and then...
And then stick a hotel
and then, like,
on top of it.
Just replace a hotel. I mean, that's
the families
happened.
Might take issue with that.
No, then we get into the eminent domain discussion, and that's a whole different game.
Well, he is a lawyer.
That's right.
Reed, what?
What do I do?
No. Like, who do you reach out to? Like, who wants your services?
I am an estate planning attorney and probate, elder law, so wills, trusts. If you have someone who, a grandparent or a parent or a relative who is looking at long-term care or assisted living, I help people not go broke in
all right.
for that. So,
so
it's better than divorcing people. It's great.
Like a lot better or like a
lot better?
Did you used to do that?
No.
Okay. So you don't really know.
But I see it a lot. I see my friends who divorce people. They don't seem very happy with it.
Okay. All right. Reed McCarthy of Ann Arbor Elder Law. If you need him, it's AnnArborElderLaw.com, right?
Yeah.
And he also has a phone that has a number
yes.
that's on AnnArborElderLaw.com.
It's 734-945-9693.
And if you remember that's great. All right. Thanks for being on.
Yeah. Man. Fun, as
Take
always.
One more break. Sure. Come back. Talk about, I guess, Maryland.
I guess, if we must.
Yeah.
I grew up in a small town of Hazlitt, Michigan, and I witnessed a lot of great people making a lot of poor financial decisions. And I thought to myself, I don't want to be in that position. I don't want to have my retirement at risk. Over the last 17 years, my team has developed and refined our process, which helps people understand what's important to them and what they value most. And because people don't have pensions anymore, we're adding in multiple income streams during retirement. At Peak Wealth Management, our goal is to build long-lasting relationships, and we do that by building trust, by showing our integrity, and letting them know how much we care. And that's one of the most important things we do here at Peak, is understand your goals and help you get there.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom-printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
If you find yourself on the wrong side of the law in Ann Arbor or around Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man in the huddle. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, michiganlawgrad.com.
If you're looking for a mortgage and you're a Michigan fan, there's only one place to go. HomeSure Lending. Both fair and honest, HomeSure Lending is local, efficient, and small enough so you'll work directly with the owner, Matt Demarest. Matt bleeds maize and blue, and so does his family.
Hey, this is Matt Demarest. I'm the owner of HomeSure Lending. We're a small, local, family-owned business, and so I'm here with a couple of members of my family, Cooper and Colby, my boys. Cooper, how old are you, buddy?
9.
Colby, what about you?
7.
Who's the best team in the whole country?
Michigan!
Can I get a Go Blue?
Go Blue!
We're a family business here in Ann Arbor. I'd love to serve you and your family with any of your mortgage needs.
Located at 2723 South State Street in Ann Arbor. For more info, go to homeshorelending.com. That's HomeSureLending. You can reach Matt at 734-531-9950. HomeSure Lending, NMLS 1161358, Equal Housing Lender.
If you've got a cold room or you're feeling drafts in your house, you probably want to take care of that before winter. Here's what you've got to do. Call Ecotelligent Homes for a comprehensive home energy audit. They will find the source of your issue. Their licensed teams will install the fixes. They will help you qualify for the right local rebates, and they even offer 0% financing. Ecotelligent Homes is an award-winning DTE Energy and Consumers Energy trade ally. Call 248-291-7815. Or visit their website at ecotelligenthomes.com.
All right. Some music, you can take some drugs to right there.
Okay, that's definitely a thing that we just said.
That was the theme of this podcast. Come on, don't act like that was that outrageous.
What, the drugs?
Yeah.
I never said anything about drugs, okay. Did you?
No.
Well, just now.
Yeah.
But what's going on? Well, why is that
raves,
a thing?
Man.
You were, oh, raves.
Yeah.
Do people do drugs at raves?
No, definitely not.
Yeah, thanks. thanks, Morris, if anyone heard Morris just loses his mind about that. I was joking, Morris. Okay. I know what drugs are. Also, I've played Magic. So, Maryland is definitely a football team, except at quarterback, where they're kind of a tumbleweed factory.
Yeah.
That's not their fault, at least this time.
It's true. It's true. I mean, they beat Texas in the opener, and they look awesome. They score 51 points.
With Piggy.
With Piggy. And I'm like, that's insane. They're going to suck this year. And then they, like, annihilate Texas. And Piggy has, like, 175 passing yards on 12 attempts.
And then he gets hurt. Ran the ball well, and then, yeah.
And then Kasim Hill comes in, and he gets hurt in the next game. And I looked this up on Football Study Hall when I was doing the preview. And they got 33 attempts from those two quarterbacks that averaged 12.4 yards an attempt.
Mm-hmm.
And Bortenschlager is averaging 4.6 yards drop back, which is like...
not great. Horrendous,
horrendous, horrendous, horrendous. And it's not, I mean, DJ Durkin probably makes a bowl and he's looking up at a pretty good season for Maryland standards. But he's down to his third quarterback, and he might be down to number four in this one.
Yeah. They said Bortenschlager went out with a shoulder injury in the fourth quarter of the Rutgers game. And in came in a 5'11". They say he's 5'11". I don't think he even is.
Right. He's like a Trey Burke-sized person. Although he actually measured in at like 6 foot at the combine, didn't he?
I think we saw this guy. I think we saw him at Sound Mind, Sound Body, actually.
He's from Detroit.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I'm sure we did. I wasn't paying close attention.
to the 5'11 Air Force guys?
Yeah, that was not where my eyes were being drawn. But I don't know.
But had we...
Can't imagine as much upside there.
Yeah, had we would have gotten the only scouting that's available on that guy, because he's
for real.
Well, he completes like 8 of 12 passes, and he tries to like lead a tying touchdown drive against Rutgers. He does, but a completion to DJ Moore, I think, in the end zone gets called back for holding. And that's like his entire college career to date. He had 1 year at Air Force. He went to a JUCO, and he transferred to Maryland as a walk-on. And Ryan Brand might be their starting quarterback. And it won't go well.
No, not against this defense.
I mean, the one thing that Maryland does have unequivocally is a pair of very good receivers. You know, DJ Moore.
Running backs, I mean.
No, receivers.
Receivers too, yeah.
Well, yeah, their skill positions are high quality.
Yeah.
So DJ Moore might be the best player and wide receiver in the conference, and then Tavon Jacobs I think is underrated. He's got a good catch rate. He's solid.
Well, he's their
player.
Slot guy,
right? So they've got a bunch of slippery slot guys, and they have an offense that did a really good job of taking advantage of them last year. Not so much this year, in large part because Bortenschlager isn't really allowing you to play 11-on-11 in the run game.
Well, and they also just have no secondary skill help. I mean, Moore's getting 45% of their targets.
Right.
That's bananas.
Yeah, it's almost
and Jacobs has taken up almost 30% himself.
Yeah. So it's those two guys and then the two running backs who are basically the same player.
Yeah.
One's having more success this year, but I think that's just random.
Yeah, one's getting the Caron Higdon blocking, one's getting the Chris Evans blocking right now.
Yeah, and this game they're going to try to do what they did last year. They're going to try to get outside. They're going to try to expose Mike McCray in space. They're going to try to do anything to get away from Mo Hurst, and it's going to work a little bit, but not really. And they're going to get 10 points. They're going to struggle to get to 200 yards, just like every game this season that wasn't against Penn State.
And when they drop back to pass, it's going to be dangerous for whoever is holding the football.
Right, because their pass protection is like 115th or something on S&P Plus.
111th.
And I think part of that is Bortenschlager. Just not being mobile. They have to change.
Well, he makes some interesting decisions in there, too.
The moon ball was certainly a decision that you could make.
I don't think he did that on purpose.
Well, no, but certainly. When you've held the ball that long and you're still trying to fire a ball from the pocket.
There were people closing on him from like three different directions.
Sure.
Just
it was
like,
an interesting
choice. I'm going to chuck this up in the air.
And just whatever he was trying to do, he was throwing that ball really hard.
Well,
if you don't know what we're talking about, it's the clip on top of the Maryland film post.
Yeah.
But, man, that was like a Brad Robbins punt.
A little shorter.
A
little shorter.
Yeah.
And then the Maryland defense has lost a couple of guys that are important to them, and Kingsley Opara isn't really playing up to his preseason level of self-hype.
No.
They get no pass rush at all. Like, their top pass rush guy on the defensive line has 2 sacks. Both of them were against Towson. They've got 3.5 sacks from Jermaine Carter, so that could be a problem for Michigan because they suck at picking up blitzes. But this looks like the kind of passing defense that could be like, hey, Brandon Peters went 18 for 25 and had 250 yards in the air, and now we feel good about him.
Yeah, I mean, they turned over quite a bit in the secondary. They don't have a ton of talent there in the first place. And, I mean, Seth pointed out in the film post, their best defensive lineman is a DT playing DE. Like, that's not great for your pass rush. Might be good for stopping the run, but it's not great for your pass rush.
No, and the guy who's supposed to be pass rushing, the Buck linebacker, for those of us who remember DJ Durkin's defense, he is just not good at all at pass rushing. And that's the guy that you're...
That's their glamour dude.
Right, that defense is made to get him matched up against a tackle, and he wasn't getting any... Anyway, they try to get it back by blitzing the linebackers a lot, and they're small linebackers, so even Jermaine Carter, who's supposed to be the good one, he just, against Wisconsin, just getting blown up because He's small.
He's 230, and nobody can keep him
off. He's not even 230.
So this is going to be, I think, a lot like the previous two games on offense as well, where this is a defense that is not well-suited to holding up to, like, a really mashing run game. And that's something that's an interesting like side effect of the metagame in college football right now, is that you're going to go up against these defenses and they're going to try to defend the spread. And if they're making compromises on talent level, then you're going to have a pretty big advantage over them. Now, an Ohio State might be oriented to stop the spread, but they have five-star athletes, so they can do both.
Yeah, but when you're Maryland and you're trying to find athletic 225-pound linebackers, yeah, you might not have guys who can also hold up against a power scheme.
And they're like, you know, 54th or something in rush defense right now. They've had a couple of good outings, a couple of decent outings, but they got gashed for 5.6 yards a carry against Rutgers. They got hit for 5.2 against Wisconsin, and that kind of undersells it, because that Wisconsin game was a lot like the Rutgers game that Michigan had,
right?
Where they're just getting 6, 7, 8 yards a clip, and they don't break any long ones.
No, they leave us, you know, the Durkin defense, they leave a safety way back off
right,
the screen.
Yeah.
And so you'll break through that line because their edges are not very strong. Well, they have one good edge, and the other guy's terrible. So they break through the line, and then the safety will come and get in your way, and then someone gets you from behind.
Right, so the safety's not tackling you at 2 yards like we've seen a lot this year. He's tackling you at 5 or 6.
Right.
And that'll be a nice change of pace for a Michigan offense that's seen
very aggressive safeties all year.
Everybody within 8 yards of line of scrimmage in most games. So that'll be a change, and they don't have to block that guy. They'll let the running back try to take care of him. So that, on top of, you know, what looks like a personnel deficiency, their weak side linebacker is out, and they have a replacement.
Yeah, their weak side linebacker / quarterback.
Yep.
Right. Yes.
Because he played. Yeah, he's been suspended most of the year, so they've been playing this other guy, Davis. Shane Cockrell is the one who's out.
So Cockrell last year didn't know what he was
almost dragged down the entire defense on his own.
Right.
Yeah.
And this guy is the backup to this guy.
The backup to Shane Cockrell. And Cockrell has not been any better this year when he was playing. So
this is like, this is another situation where you might see, you know, the Rutgers game where linebackers are like stopping for no apparent reason because they don't know if it's a counter or a regular power. Like, I think that's going to happen. And you're going to see Michigan buy back linebacker blocks a lot. And that counters, like, it's weird that Michigan is just finding a lot of weak side linebackers who are terrible. Because the Minnesota guy, ooh.
The counter step really futzed with him.
And you're just like, all right, so I've taken a false step. Now what do I do? How about I run into this offensive lineman with an angle to block me? Okay, that's definitely an approach. You definitely took that approach.
This guy was an interesting watch because he had Jermaine Carter next to him, and Carter actually knows what he's supposed to do. So he's like, come on, we're blitzing, let's go. And Carter would like run into the line, and the guy would be following him and then like stop and eat a blocker for no reason.
Yeah. So confused linebacker going up against Jim Harbaugh rushing offense that's pretty locked in right now. I think you're going to see – I mean, you can't ever predict a 400-yard game like Michigan had against Maryland. I mean, Minnesota, but I don't think Michigan's S&P rush ranking is going to drop after this one.
That's a fair assessment.
Up to 12 now, and they've the last two teams they've played, they've like knocked them down 30 spots each after paving them. So it's really kind of coming together. Do we have anything else to say about the Maryland Terrapins?
Their special teams are kind of a disaster.
I don't know if they're a disaster.
They're 119th in the S&P Plus on here. And like almost, I know special teams
S&P Plus.
I don't like
S&P Plus for...
But
they have an
their
Aussie
field
punter.
Goal kicking has been very inconsistent.
Their punter averages 39 yards a kick.
Yeah, they do not like Wade Lease as a pointer because he doesn't actually like kick it far.
Well, he's an interesting guy. So they gave up a 91-yard punt return in their opener, which was not his fault at all. Like the guy was like surrounded by dudes when he caught the ball.
Yeah.
And then since then, they've given up like 7 return yards. And he's got one touchback on the year. He's an Aussie. So, like, I think he's just intentionally putting it short and in fair catch land.
He must be.
I mean, he's an older guy. He's kind of, you know, he's closer to our age than he is to most college players.
Although, when you look at he's not their kickoff specialist either, and their kickoff specialist only has 5 touchbacks on 50 kickoffs.
Yeah,
that's not great.
Yeah, but how many times are they going to kick off?
Hey, Ambry Thomas has looked pretty decent on it. Avery Thomas is.
Are they fooging it? I didn't watch the kickoffs that much.
I don't think they're fooging it. I just don't think he has a leg.
Their kickoff success rate is very low. So if they were fooging it, then fooging it. What is it?
Fogue.
Okay.
That's why we have ace.
They do have a couple of impressive returners because Ty Johnson does.
Ty Johnson handles kickoffs. Yeah, he's cribbed one this year.
And so has. And DJ Moore's averaging like 13 yards a return
as a punt returner.
So
yeah.
That's going to be maybe a little bit of a sore spot because. You know, Michigan had one taken almost all the way back early in the year.
Yeah,
they were on a pro style.
Yeah,
so that could be. You could see DJ Moore rip some returns off here, but whether
that's
the
pretty minor concern. Yeah, I mean, in the overall scope of this game, I think
DJ Moore returning punts is almost their entire offense too, because they're just going to find ways to get him in space, and then it's basically a punt return.
Well, they have other guys to get in space. It's going to be
him and the running backs and the
a lot of screens, a lot of like little toss plays to get to the edge. And like, are you playing responsible? Can the cornerbacks tackle? Can McCray keep up? You know, the questions that we've mostly seen answered in the positive, except for McCray.
Yeah.
So,
and even McCray, like, I mean, we saw him last year in this very game, like, figure it out as the game went on.
So
he should be probably pretty ready for this one.
I mean, one of the most more interesting things is going to be like, how does Aubrey Solomon look? Against a guy in Terrence Davis, who I think is at his level.
And I'd say the safeties, too. I mean, just making sure that they don't blow something on some misdirection because, you know, they're going to get messed with a little bit in this game.
But I think everybody agrees that this is just going to be the same game for the third straight week.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, yeah. I mean, it should be a relative paving.
Paving. We're paving people. That's nice. Like, isn't it nice to have a run game that's just like, oh, we'll probably get 300 yards against these guys. It doesn't matter who they are.
I'm wondering if it's like I could go back and watch the Moon game yet and be like, all right, that's over now.
That should be like a Halloween tradition. You go back and you watch the Moon game. Wasn't it on Halloween?
Spooky. It was close.
It
might have been.
Because there's like the screenshot and there's like Northwestern fans and like.
In costume and whatever, yeah.
It. The game. We'd like to thank our sponsors one final time, Underground Printing, The Bow Store, The Residence Inn, Ann Arbor Downtown, Homeshore Lending, Peak Wealth Management, the Alumni Association of the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor Elder Law, and his strong board game opinions, Lantana Hummus, Human Element, Ecotelligent Homes, and Michigan Law Grad.
Who's got it better than us?